Hey everybody, it's Pat Loika with a little disclaimer here. You will notice while you're listening to the podcast that I cough quite a bit because I've been sick when I recorded this episode, so I apologize for that audio annoyance. And another thing is that in the latter half of the show, Adam and I discuss a video that Eric Powell had put up on YouTube about, basically a call to arms for diversity in comics and supporting creator-owned books and that sort of thing. And as of this, as of the time you received this podcast, that video had been taken down by Eric. Just want to, also reassure you that we are not in any way against the message of the video. We just thought that the video itself was kind of a bad move. But whatever. Enjoy the show, and I'll talk to you later. This is Pat Loika, and you're listening to Loika Mania, episode 25. Today is going to be a somewhat different episode. I don't really have much to recommend as far as the new stuff goes, because as of this time, the new books haven't picked up our new books yet. But I did want to talk about last week's big book, which is Fantastic Four, and there will be spoilers here. So if you hate spoilers, you'll probably hate this episode, unless you turn it off and wait till you've read it. I am joined today by a good friend of mine who has been here before, a frequent collaborator, and probably one of the best people I know. His name is Adam Witt. Hello, Adam.
Hey, Pat, what's up?
Not too much. Just the usual. How about you? How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Just moved out of Chicago to Pennsylvania and settling in and all that.
How bad is the snow out there?
I'm in a valley right now, so we got a massive 1.5 inches of snow. The snow in Chicago, they
it's
just
probably a lot it, worse there.
It never the entire time I was there for 21 years, going on 22, and they never declared a state of emergency until yesterday with the storm that's coming
I
in.
I think it's because of your departure. I think Chicago.
I don't think they were that dismayed about it.
Chicago needs its wits.
I think the snow hit as a way of just saying, and stay out to me.
So. It's like a warning, don't you ever come back. Snow.
But they're supposed to get 1.5 feet, so.
Ooh, boy. At any rate, I mentioned Fantastic Four, and like me, you have been keeping up with the book because of wonderful work by Mr. Jonathan Hickman. And I think he really hit his stride when Steve Epting joined him. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
And the most recent story arc that just concluded, it's titled 3 or Countdown to Casualty, or whatever you want to call it. It has probably one of the best Fantastic Four stories I've read. And it really solidifies Hickman as an FF writer, I think.
Well, what was the best run of Fantastic Four before this is kind of the way you have to look at it. Basically, Wade and Ringo, that ended in 2006 or late 2005, I can't
something
remember.
Somewhere along those lines, yes.
Yeah, it's been kind of dry going so far. I mean, as it comes, they're an awesome team. They've got a rich history in comics. The book started out in 61. It's got some of the best Lee and Kirby stuff early on. And then it's kind of bumpy from there. You've got the John Byrne and Perez stuff, and that's all pretty good. John Byrne's stuff was way
John Byrne's stuff was great. I thought Simonson had an underrated run. He did some fun stuff.
They had the replacement Fantastic Four with the Gray Hulk? And
yeah, one of the final arcs was the new Fantastic Four story with Ghost Rider, Punisher. I'm not the Punisher. Ghost Rider, Wolverine, and Spidey and the Hulk.
Same character.
Oh man, imagine the Punisher as part of the Fantastic Four. You see a four.
I totally
want to
see that now.
I would totally buy that book because it'd be ridiculous. And yeah, the the Ringo and Wade arc was probably the last good run. Even then,
it was kind of bumpy, you know? Like, I mean, it had some of the better Fantastic Four adventure stories, I think, mm-hmm. but it was up and down. It hit little bumps. It wasn't perfect. I think thus far, Hickman, like, the worst thing I can say about this run so far is some of the art's been inconsistent.
Yeah, that's also my concern about Hickman's run. I thought I thought he did fantastic stuff when Eaglesham was illustrating the arc, but then when he would switch to a fill-in like Neil Edwards, and no slight to Neil's talent, but I don't think he meshed well with the book and what Hickman was doing. Yeah. And the thing about Eaglesham, of course, he's not really a reliable monthly artist, so it was difficult to kind of, you know, it was difficult for him to get in the groove of things, so he ended up leaving the book a little too soon. But they fixed that with Steve Epting.
Yeah, the last issue of the book, the 588, which I think comes out in the middle of February mm-hmm. or somewhere around there, is going to be drawn by Nick Vergata.
And Mark Brooks.
And Mark Brooks. Yeah. The preview on CBR looks really good. So.
Yeah, I saw some of the preview art as well. I think it was great. It's a good way to end the run. I don't know why Steve wasn't drawing that issue, but I think I'm sure he's preparing for whatever the next incarnation of FF is going to be.
587 was extra size, and I think the FF relaunch is going to be extra size, so he probably needed a little more lead time.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. But we'll jump right into this particular arc, and I thought, you know, from the first chapter of the book, it really seemed like. How do I say this? They weren't really quite specific as to what the threat is going to be, and how this thing is going to go down. Because all you know is someone's going to die by the end of the arc. But they
really played up the mystery edge of it, particularly in the last issue. I mean, in this issue that came out just now, it looked like it could have been anybody as it kept going, and then it was like, okay, it rolls this person out.
Yeah, and the thing that I loved about it is that everyone is pretty much in peril, you know. Everyone is in a situation where they're going to be screwed, and mm-hmm. you just don't know which one. Because, I mean, when Reed's story started, you'd think, it was going to be Galactus that's going to screw him over. But then it turns out Galactus needed his help on something else, and they went somewhere else. And over there is where he could possibly be screwed over, mm-hmm. but it turns out that's not the case. Then the same thing goes with Sue. First Sue visits Utopia, where the X-Men are, and of course you realize, oh yeah, Namor's there, of course he's going to visit him. And it turns out to be some kind of, a callback to a story earlier in the arc with the older Atlanteans. And that turned out to be something else when Namor decided to, you know, take matters into his own hands. And this is also one of the most badass Namor moments in a year. In the span of 2 years, where Namor has been a super badass all over the place, when he just murders one of the older Atlantean kings, and he just goes, and that look in his face after he did it, you know, that glimmer of pride was just great. I thought Epting did a fantastic job with Namor and his facial expressions throughout the whole thing.
Everything Epting's drawn so far has been really impressive. I love the there's a spread, I think, in the issue before the death issue where it's Johnny flying out of the car with, you know, the depowered Ben Grimm as he's flying up the top, you know, because Reed's just, you know, come into contact with Galactus.
Mm-hmm.
He's flying up to find out what's going on. It's just really beautiful art.
Oh yeah. And then of course,
letting him stretch a little more than he got to on Captain America.
Yeah, Captain America, he's been mostly drawing, you know, like covert operation stuff. He never really got to stretch because there's a lot of dark hallways or interior stuff or crowd scenes and that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, he does great crowd scenes, but I mean, this is really just like, I never pictured him as a cosmic artist, but he really does that stuff.
Well, I kind of
a lot of aplomb.
I mean, if you've ever read his old Avengers run, which he probably wouldn't recommend, you could kind of see he had it in him to do stuff like this to begin with. Like,
yeah, I was going to say no, I haven't. But yeah.
Yeah, it's when Bob Harris was writing the book. I actually bought that book. I stuck around with that book because I really like his art, and he got to draw the big '90s Avengers event, which was the Galactic Storm. Which,
right.
I can't believe I bought all those issues. Actually, thinking about that, I went through that whole thing, but it was good under his art. And it's just amazing how that the guy who drew that is the guy that we're reading in Fantastic Four now. Because he's really, really improved. He's really grown.
My favorite scenes out of the entire storyline were the when Valeria found her way out to Lat. It's going to sound really stupid. Out in Latverian, she was talking to Doom.
I really
want more follow up on that. Dying here waiting to find out
that that was the thing that I was hoping to see pay off here too. I was kind of hoping that, you know, there was a part of me that was hoping that this whole thing, this whole death of an FF member thing, was going to be a big fake out because Doom saves the day, you know. I was kind of hoping for that, but it's not what we got. But still, you know, I'm glad that this the hype meant, you know, was for something, and they delivered on it, I thought. And
also, I mean, they've got a lot of pressure going on right now with the whole death thing, because they're finally, I think, starting to take it seriously in comics. Like, in the last 5 years, it's going to come into prevalence, especially one, you know, they gained a lot of goodwill through the Captain America death, because the book picked up so much acclaim and so much readership with that, and then kept it. You know, if you mm-hmm. look at the sales figures, they, you know, it went up a lot and then stayed steady and still was, you know, really regarded as one of the better mm-hmm. books on the stands. Mm-hmm. So it was the sort of thing where I think it wasn't met with the normal amount of cynicism that you get from the comics crowds.
Uh-huh.
Like, I mean, it was, you know, of course you had the people going, well, it's not going to last. And of course it's not going to last. But Steve Rogers was dead for, I want to say, a year and a half. Which
almost
is,
2 years,
mean,
yeah. Which is considering.
I looked back and I saw that was March 2007, and I was like, "Holy crap!" You know, I had no idea that it ran that long. But yeah, he stayed dead for that long, and that's really for a flagship character. That's something impressive.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of eyes were on Marvel for this one, and I think, you know, with Hickman's run getting so much goodwill on top of it, there was I think this paid off perfectly.
Yeah, and another thing that's great about this particular run in this storyline is the fact that, you know, a lot of people have gotten used to the fact that Hickman is a big planner, you know, and everything he does for a reason. And I think there's a lot of clues seeded in this final issue. If they do bring back Johnny within the next couple of years or during his run, you can kind of see that he's already started setting things up in case he had to bring the character back.
Right.
So I like the fact that he's so meticulous at this whole thing. You know, everything's plotted out to the smallest detail. You know, you can see that. But when he does his graphs and all that stuff, he does it for Secret Warriors and the occasional, you know, one here in Fantastic Four.
Oh,
so,
it's apparent if you read anything that he's done before,
yeah.
any of his pre-Marvel work, because it's all just really incredibly detailed, like Nightly News. Is an incredible example of what the guy can do.
And Pax Romana, I think, which is my favorite work of his, I think. It's that one was so well laid out, so detailed in the way he planned it, from, you know, the timeline that he had to construct for certain things to happen. It's just such a great read, and it's a very rewarding one too if you read it and pay attention to everything he seeds into that story.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's brought over to Marvel,
yeah.
Is the sort of thing he did with that, with Nightly News, and with everything else he's done.
Yeah, and that's what makes him an architect. One of the architects. At any rate, I mentioned that, you know, Reed and Sue both separated, and they were both kind of in perilous positions. And as far as Johnny and Ben. They were just left at home taking care of the kids. It was the most, you know, it's the most unassuming thing. You know, you're like, okay, well, they're all right. They can't possibly be in trouble after you get to like the second chapter or third chapter, and then things just start going to hell when when Annihilus's people started coming in to the picture, and then you realize, man, okay, nobody's really safe here.
That actually had me thinking that it was going to end up being one of the kids that got killed.
Yeah.
Especially given some of the things Marvel's done recently that have basically been giant slaps in the face of the old comics code.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've read Uncanny X-Force.
Yeah, that was a great book. I didn't know you read that. I checked
it out because I like Remender. It's not my normal thing, but yeah, that's a really cool book.
Yeah, that was actually last week. That was my pick of the week above this book, and that's because I was never really as big of a Fantastic Four fan as I was an X fan. But I enjoyed it. Actually, if you want to talk about that, we'll get into that in a bit too.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, this is when we finally got to the end, and you got to that sequence where someone's definitely gonna die. It was either gonna be Ben or Johnny. That's when things just really picked up. The emotional writing, you know, was just something else. You know, the way Ben is acting towards Johnny, and they've had an antagonistic relationship, but you all know they love each other. They're like brothers.
Yeah.
But just when you got to that point, you're like, "Oh man, this is serious." One of these guys.
I think the best part of it was how Pikmin established their friendship throughout
this arc. Yeah,
since the vacation arc toward the beginning, they've kind of been attached at the hip throughout his run.
Yeah.
So.
And
bickering and all that, but during this arc they really start to bond, and I think that's actually an edge of the story that gets ignored a lot. Typically they're just bickering and nothing else, and it'll be the sort of thing where it's like, "Oh, you saved my life, Johnny, thanks," you know, where it's just kind of an aside, but you never get to see them really like talk and have in-depth conversations and things like that. The closest I've seen to that was Marvel Knights 4. I think this really did it. It built up to that well.
Yeah, and that particular issue, you know, where we got to see Ben kind of enjoy being a man again for whatever amount of time he had, that was probably one of the best single issues I've read last year. And I think that's one of those issues that you could have read by itself, and you'll still get a complete story out of it. And I thought that was so well done. And when you read that issue, and then you read this particular issue, and you know. The newest issue. I mean, you just realize how you by that point you kind of got into the characters again. I mean, you could be the most you could not care at all about the Fantastic Four, but you can read those issues and you become all of a sudden you'll be attached to those characters just because of the way that issue went down. And then when you get to this final issue. You just get your heart broken, basically. It's and I was actually really sad by this thing. I was honest to God, I was very, very sad by the way it ended, and it's just a testament to the work of both Epting and Hickman, because you know they go hand in hand together. That issue would not have been as good if it was someone else drawing that book. I can promise you that.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, the script would probably be, great, but, without that skill that Epting brings to the table, I don't think it would have been as great as it was. At any rate, people talking about death in comics lately and the way people just, the way publishers or whatever editorial mandates deal with characters, do you think people actually gave enough of a crap about this book that they'd be pissed off? Because I don't know, they did quite a bit of hyping for this book, and I'm pretty sure there's still people out there who were skeptical about the way this whole thing went down.
I think people were still skeptical because you're dealing with comic readers. You know, comics and death don't really have a good history together. it's one of quick reversals and things that are done out of fan service or editorial mandate and all that. It really just they don't gel well. It was the sort of thing that's always been treated very cavalierly, and it is, and that's one of the things that Hickman's really doing right, and that Ed Brubaker before him did right, is that it's a very real thing. It's the sort of thing that your characters have to react to, and you've got these people who are larger than life, saving us from everyday threats. It's going to affect the world at large. When the Fantastic Four becomes Fantastic Three, that's a worldwide event.
Yeah, and I find it very funny that. The day the book was due to come out, which is last Tuesday, the ending got spoiled for me in two places: a text message from a friend and on Facebook when someone posted a link to an article which tells you the what happens. You know, I'm like, really? Seriously? And the fact that people I don't know, like I have people at work who have never touched a comic book in their life coming up to me asking me about Johnny Storm. I'm like, Jesus Christ, I haven't even read the book yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, that I think it's cool that it got that kind of attention.
Since they advertise it as a death issue, it got more coverage quicker than, for example, I keep going back to it, but the Captain America thing is the closest parallel I can draw to it, you know?
Yeah.
So it was, I think it was the sort of thing that people picked up, the media and such picked up on and held on to and kept carrying through, because, I mean, it was on NPR, it was on, you know, typical television broadcast, the internet.
But
you couldn't really go anywhere without running into it.
Yeah, but it's kind of different, though, because Captain America is Captain America. Johnny Storm, you know, he's Johnny Storm. And to be quite honest, I mean, well, everyone can say Fantastic Four, and everyone knows what a Fantastic Four is. I don't think people will really... excuse me. I don't think people really know who the character, you know, Johnny Storm is, who the Human Torch is. So it's, I guess the movies helped, you know, the character's visibility, and more people know of him, and I think... that's probably why people actually cared, because it was him, and less people probably would have cared if it was Reed or Sue, I think. But I don't know.
I think Reed or Sue would have seemed a little cheap, because they're the sort of characters that you've got to assume it won't stick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
with any of them, though, to be honest.
Oh, of course. I'm speaking theoretically here, but in particular, if it's one of those two, it's not going to stick long, because you've got characters that are children in the picture. You've got... you know, there'd have to be a significant amount of planning. I'm sure it could make it work somehow between the people that are involved at the creative end of the book. But at the same time, longtime readers, new readers, everybody's going to look at that and go, really? Because when you think of the core of the team, you kind of think of Reed and Sue.
Yeah, that's true. But again, I mean, and also I think it's just the first time Johnny Storm has ever been killed off, because I'm pretty sure this is.
The other three have died. He hasn't. So, yeah.
So I guess it was his turn, basically. It's only fair that he got to do it once. Like, so that works out. But, yeah, I mean, for a death issue, I thought it was handled really well. I thought the media thing was kind of a pain in the ass, but if you realize, you know, Marvel wants to attract hundreds of thousands of readers to pick this up.
Yeah, it's a pain in the ass, of course, but you can't blame... you've got to understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, it's a business, and it's good business to tell people, you know, you might want to buy this. Although, hopefully it picks up some new readers because of this whole stunt, because that's really why they took that big gamble and you know, pissed off people by spoiling it. I mean, you don't really want to ruin any goodwill with your diehard fans. And, well, you know, I personally don't really care that much. I mean, I'm annoyed. I'll be annoyed at first, but I don't really care in the long run. Well, I just hope it was worth their while that they got something out of it. And, of course, it's Epting and Hickman. They deserve a bigger audience anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, we'll move on. You mentioned... damn, we spent almost 20 minutes talking about the Fantastic Four. I never thought I'd do that. Well... excuse me. The next thing I want to kind of jump into is something you mentioned briefly, and that's X-Force number 4, Uncanny X-Force number 4, rather. It's by Rick Remender and Jerome Opeña, and once again, we will have some spoilers here. And first thing I'm going to say is, I did not know you read this book. If I had known sooner, I would have been talking to you about this book, because this is probably one of my favorite ongoings right now.
Yeah, I'm impressed by it. I didn't read anything that came before it, so I'm kind of like, what's going on throughout most of it, because there's a lot of history and a lot of, you know, things that it doesn't spoon feed to you.
Yeah,
it reminded me of a Morrison comic quite a bit.
There's some, you know, there's a Morrison character in here, you know, in Phantom X, and there's and of course Rick Remender is always much like Morrison. He is a high concept type of guy, so he likes to slip a few of those in there as well. I thought this particular issue, the way they handled the dealing with this particular threat, you know, dealing with Apocalypse, basically. Apocalypse in the form of a child. I thought it was fantastic. I liked the conflict between Archangel, Psylocke, and Wolverine over what to do with the kid. I thought that was great, because it makes so much sense. I mean, Wolverine, you know, it's been established that he's a killer. You know, he's killed many, many times before, regardless of whether or not he was with the X-Men or not. But, you know, it's nice to know that he does have his limits and he does think, too, aside from, you know, he's more than just the mission at hand. Right. And, of course, out of all them, Psylocke was the first person that I knew was going to say, I can't do that because, well, you know, it's a kid.
And, of course you're going to have, you know, Warren Worthington's going to get battled over it because this is a guy who's, you know, basically controlled him on and off, you know, throughout various iterations. And it's going to be the sort of thing where he's going to be torn in and out of it, so.
Yeah, I thought that was great. Deadpool's comic relief was actually good because it kind of lightens up the mood.
Deadpool in issue 3 was fantastic. Yeah.
I thought he was great in 4 too. Like that gag with Archangel at the beginning when he was feeding him.
I thought that was in issue 3, but
that was in 4. That was insane. That was just
ridiculous.
That was just wrong.
You promise keep eating.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I absolutely loved that gag. I thought I couldn't believe this was in a Marvel comic. But
it was like I was saying earlier, like a lot of the things that Marvel has been doing lately basically seems like giant slaps in the face of the comics code authority, because I wouldn't give this book to a kid ever.
Oh no. But yeah, it's an amazing book. Jerome Pena, I think he's when I spoke with Rick Remender at the last New York Comic Con.
Yeah.
And when I was talking to him about how, you know, like Opeña stuff is really starting to remind me of Travis Charest stuff, and he told me wait till you see the later issues because he gets better than that, and he wasn't kidding because this issue.
Yeah, reminds me of a combination between like Charest and Lionel Yu.
I can kind of see that. Yeah, the scratchiness of Lionel Yu stuff, the hatching.
And the clarity of Charest's art.
Yeah. It's really, really phenomenal.
His stuff on Fear Agents is terrific.
Oh, yeah. I loved his Fear Agents stuff, and I'm kind of sad that, you know, Fear Agents about to end, and it was cool that Tony Moore is drawing it, but, you know, it's still sad I didn't get to see him do more. I didn't get to see Jerome do more of that.
Yeah, well, I want to say he drew Strange Girl for a while. That's another really cool series. It's well worth checking out. So.
Oh, yeah. I think Remender has yet to do anything that I didn't like. I mean, the only possible thing that he could have done that I probably might not have enjoyed was him inking over Kieran Dwyer on a bad book, even though I like Kieran Dwyer's art. I mean, I think he's done some... He's inked him over on, I think during Grunwald's Cap run, I think there were some issues that he did, I think.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. Dwyer was drawing that for a while. I believe Remender was always inking over him. And I always thought it was cool that, wow, this is the guy that was inking over Dwyer in Avengers, and now he's writing the most awesome X-Force book ever. It's just, wow. But, yeah, when they finally get to the end of this thing, and they Phantom X basically delivers the killing blow to the kid.
Very simple resolution, yeah.
Yeah, very simple. There's no drama. There's no talking after that. They you can just see by the facial expressions when they get into Eva that, you know, they were all really affected or disturbed by what just happened, and they're not talking about it. They won't talk about it. So it should be interesting to see how this eventually. We'll play off, because this is going to get to them eventually, all this killing and all this stuff that they're doing behind people's backs.
If nothing else, it's going to cause tension within the group itself, so...
Yeah, and you are
already
starting...
Probably be a little bit more bickering.
And you're already seeing, you know, the tension already when they got to that final, you know, that final confrontation. Mm-hmm. So, we'll see. I mean, and I'm pretty sure this is not the last we'll hear of Apocalypse's people, just because, well... You know, their master
was
murdered.
They tend never to go away.
Yeah, they just don't. But, yeah, we'll move on. I hear you've reread Winterman.
Yeah, that's... We were talking earlier about books that don't get enough love, you know, or books that really need a wider audience, and that's one of those under-the-radar things. A lot of those miniseries that came out through Wildstorm that really deserve a little extra hand, because it's, I mean, between Brett Lewis's writing, and really I think that's some of the best dialogue I've ever read in a comic. I mean, that guy can write like nobody's business. But beyond that, and I mean, getting into J.P. Leon's art, I mean, beautiful stuff.
Yeah, Brett Lewis is, he's actually a really brilliant writer. I think he's had some health issues over the last few years, and that's probably contributed to this book being late when it was coming out monthly. And I,
this book never came out monthly.
Well, it was supposed to come out monthly.
Well, it started back at the end of 2004 and finally finished in December 2008 or somewhere around there.
Was it? Yeah, I know.
It was in the first previews I read when I worked at a comic shop. Like mm-hmm. It was the first previews that I read when I started working there. I started working there in September of 2004. So.
Yeah, I thought he was I was gonna say, he had some real health problems that really screwed him up.
Yeah, he got hit in the back of the head with a bottle at a bar and into a coma.
Yeah, among other things. Yeah, I'm glad that he's kind of back up. He's still doing work. I mean, he just did I think Fallout Toy Works. I believe he did that series for Image, and I'm not
the
sure.
The art on that is just beautiful. I saw the preview pages for it. It's not the sort of thing I'd pick up, but the art is just ridiculous.
Yeah, the art on that book is also really pretty. Lewis knows how to pick the right collaborators for his stuff. Mm-hmm. And like I was going to say with Winterman, it doesn't get any better than John Paul Leon. He is probably the best illustrator that doesn't really get enough attention. He's his work here. I mean, I was so sad that this book wasn't doing well enough because this is some of Leon's best work. I mean, I've been a fan of his stuff since Earth X, and I thought his storytelling was great. His page design and layout is great. It's amazing how well planned it is. I mean, even the word balloons are planned so well because he works with I think this was lettered by John Workman, who he always works with. Yes, it's John Workman lettered the book. And
he's absolutely the best letterer.
Yeah, his stuff is the only stuff that works perfect with John.
Yeah, I
want to
say he still hand letters.
Yeah, he does. He still does, and he does some work by computer, but I believe this is all by hand. And
yeah,
that
I'm pretty sure his store right now is pretty much all by hand too. Stuff he's doing with Fraction, or at least it really looks like it's done by hand.
Yeah, I have so much respect for that guy because letters don't get enough love, and he's one of those guys that's just he's just one of those really nice guys. Because I got to meet him once actually when I met I forgot which con it was, but I met John Paul Leon. And I was talking to him for a bit. I had to sign. He did a Sergeant Fury in his Howling Commandos one shot.
Okay.
And I got him to sign that. I was telling him how it's great that he was working with John Workman still and all that. And then he's like, "Oh, he's right here. Do you want him to sign the book?" I'm like, "Oh, cool." Yeah,
nice.
Workman and Leon, they do phenomenal stuff together. It's just nice to see this type of work still out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
The story itself in the book was phenomenal too. I just love that they went to focus on this. I mean, it's not just a typical superhero story. They could have done a superhero thing, but they didn't. And this was very. I don't even know how to describe this.
It's a Cold War story, basically.
It's a Cold War story, yeah. But it's a different kind of take on it.
Yeah, it's the extreme other end to Watchmen.
Yeah.
It's after everything's wiped out, nobody's trying to put on the capes anymore. Uh-huh. It's kind of like Watchmen: The Unemployed Issues. it's a terrific book, though. It's one of those things that a superhero reader, a mystery comic reader, pretty much if you like Ed Brubaker, if you like the stuff Jonathan Hickman's doing on Fantastic Four, anything like that. I mean, it's an incredible book.
Yeah, and man, I'm looking at this again because you brought it up, and I haven't read this in a while, and it just brings me back. I'm just looking at this. I remember waiting such a long time to try and get these things because it was such a good story. I think it's in a position where you could actually do more with these characters if they decide to do more anyway. And I wouldn't
He was talking somewhere about he had a sequel planned, and there was something about a film that was supposed to happen, and that if the film, you know, sold and did well, they would make the sequel. But beyond that, yeah, I don't know. I guess it was supposed to be an ongoing. Like, he originally wanted to do it as an ongoing, get 60 issues plotted out.
Oh, man. That's a damn shame.
As far as it goes, though, I mean, for a 60-issue book that got turned into, roughly a 6-issue miniseries, I mean, it doesn't feel incomplete. It feels like it has a good stopping point. It doesn't feel like anything is left unresolved, really.
I'm Jesus Christ, this book. I'm in awe of Leon stuff, man. Every time I
actually just I just bought a Leon page.
Oh really? From yeah. Winterman?
From Challengers of the Unknown.
Nice. How much did that cost you?
$30.
Holy crap! That's amazing.
That's why I bought it. I am so broke, but it was like I saw that.
It's worth it. I need to own a page from him. Like, I have a lot of commissions from him, but I don't have any original pages, which is a mistake.
I'll send you a link to where I found it, because they have more stuff.
Was it from Splash Page Art?
Maybe.
I think that's his dealer.
Oh. Yeah, that sounds about right, though. They've got pages by Jock and a couple other guys, too.
Yeah, that's his main dealer. As we're talking about it, I'm actually looking through his stuff. He has some good pages here. He has, like, a... He has some Weapon X pages, which are pretty cool. It includes, like, a pretty badass six-panel grid thing with Sinister in it. And he has a... He doesn't have any Winterman pages, which makes me sad. He's probably hanging on to those. I wouldn't mind them re-releasing that oversized or something.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That deserves it.
Yeah, he totally does. And... I think after a certain amount of time, they do get to have the rights back to the book, and maybe they could continue it somewhere else now that Wildstorm's gone or something.
Well, they're still printing the Wildstorm books, so it's not like it's going to randomly fall out of print or anything like that. I don't know what the deal is. But.
Well, the thing is, yeah, they have to keep it in print by a certain time. I mean, they could run out of copies, but then they have to get to a certain extent before they could reprint it.
Right.
I mean, before they lose the rights, I mean.
Oh, okay.
I guess we'll see. But it would be cool if we get to see the story continue somehow. Because it's a damn shame. They set up a lot of stuff here. And a lot, there's a lot of things that they could go to, you know, from here, where it could go from here.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's a shame. But yeah, Winterman is out in trade paperback. I I remember somewhere it was supposed to be a hardcover first, too. Damn it. But, oh well. I prefer a hardcover, but I'm happy with the trade I got. I wouldn't mind them releasing a black and white version of this thing, too, although it may be difficult to tell the Siberian apart from everyone else at that point. Oh well. Yeah, Winterman, it's a pretty nice book. I'm trying to remember the page count on this thing, but it's $20, probably the best $20 you'll spend online. So yeah, it's by Brett Lewis and John Paul Leon. Look it up.
It is a little thin. For a $20 book, but I mean, it's deceptive.
It's dense, though. You know, it's really
I was about to say it's a thick book.
it's so there's you get your money's worth in the dialogue here. Of course, the art, that's all you need. And it's not the thickest book you can get for $20, but damn it, it's better than spending $20 on, like, say, a premier hardcover of companion 4 issues of a comic. So just buy this book, seriously. At any rate, we kind of brought it up for a little bit, but you know, Brett Lewis owns these characters. This is all his original content, and there has been stuff going on about online, especially about creators producing their own original content or getting people to support original, you know, creator-owned ideas, and there are some creators. Like Steve Niles had a very, very cool thing going in his blog where he's going to promote people's work in his blog. And then you got guys like Eric Powell, who produced a video that became rather controversial. And what did you think of that video, Adam?
I really like pretty much everything Eric Powell's done in comics. I think he's an incredible artist. I think The Goon is a really good book. Mm-hmm. And I really love Create Your Own Comics. I mean,
Create Your Own Comics.
Exactly.
We make Create Your Own Comics together.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, speaking as somebody who's made them and somebody who's read them for a really long time, you know, I probably love Create Your Own Comics more than 80% of the people you talk to. This video, I'd say 2 minutes into it, mm-hmm. and my reaction to it shouldn't be wanting to throw up all over my screen. Like, it's just, it's a really good message, particularly when you get past the initial portion of the video, uh-huh. because, I mean, I think it really talks down to and insults the people that it's trying to reach. And, I mean, it shouldn't get that sort of reaction out of somebody who agrees with him. Because I think if you were a superhero-only reader or somebody who wasn't prone to checking out independent comics, you'd look at that and go, well, why do I want to buy anything from this guy? And, you know, whether it's a friend or somebody at your shop or anything like that, I wouldn't take a recommendation from somebody who's going, oh, you know, I just read this really cool book and, you know, there are all these cool ideas in it. But you know what? I'm not sure if you're cool enough for it. I'm not sure if you get it. I don't like that attitude. That attitude's complete bullshit, for lack of a better term. It is not cool to treat people that way. I wouldn't take that from somebody who creates comics. I wouldn't take that from somebody who is trying to sell them to me. I wouldn't take that from a friend. I wouldn't take any more recommendations from that friend if that were how it went. So I think the message is great. Everybody should support Create Your Own Comics. But, I mean, at the same time, it's like it sounds to me like he's asking for handouts. And at the same time, a lot of people don't have the fortune that somebody like him or Robert Kirkman have had. Not everybody has the marketing machine behind them or has done it long enough to get that kind of a momentum.
Exactly.
So it's just – there. It was – again, like, I can't stress enough, the message was really good, but the execution was just terrible.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I keep trying to be kind about it. I think he got to that
– when those first couple of minutes was, I thought it was insulting to, you know, as you mentioned, to people you're trying to attract. At the same time, it's kind of insulting to the guys who actually work for the bigger publishers, and maybe they like what they're doing.
He kind of half-heartedly apologizes for it at the end. He's like, you know, the guys at Marvel love comics, and, you know, I don't doubt that, but at the same time, man, you just equated, you know, working on superheroes to getting fucked in the ass. That's not cool. You know, it's not professional at all.
No,
by any stretch of imagination. Like, I mean, I understand that that's the guy's sense of humor, but, you know, a wacky sense of humor isn't what you want to do when you're trying to push diversity in art, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's the way he really handled that whole thing. And there's really a way for him to have done that. I mean, I can understand him doing that video and that's okay, but he could have just avoided doing that whole ass fucking thing in the beginning. I understand where he's coming from, and I agree. I think people should open up, should broaden their horizons a bit, and, you know, try out more stuff. But the thing is, he's trying to preach to an audience that's,
I don't even know if he knew who he was preaching to with it was terribly unfocused.
But
you know,
because of the way he was talking about creating your own comics. So you're thinking he was talking about superhero comics. So obviously, he's trying to get superhero fans. But the
he's trying to get superhero fans. But it also sounds like he was trying to talk to creators and he was trying to talk to the companies. And it was just, it's like you've got to pick one target.
Yeah, and I mean, are you complaining about superheroes? Are you because? Robert Kirkman makes superhero comics. Rob Liefeld does superhero comics, even though they're all creator-owned.
He's just on the edge of doing superhero comics, honestly. I mean, when it comes to something like The Goon, he's just on the edge of making a superhero comic. It could be because that was what he was forced to do. It could be because that's what he wants to do, but he's just on the edge.
And he drew Action Comics for 3 issues or whatever.
He drew Action Comics. He did pinups for the Avengers finale.
He's done work for everyone, and I can understand that, but still...
Yeah, I can understand frustration. I can understand coming to the end of your rope, but you've got to, like, I mean, creating comics, especially if you're doing the indies, it's an uphill battle. Like, you get exactly as much out of it as you put into it, and it doesn't get easier unless you put everything you have into it. And, you know, it's not the sort of thing that should discourage people. It should be the sort of thing where it's like, okay, I'm working on this thing. I'm going to do whatever I can to get it out there. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to tell people about it. I'm going to read things so I know who to tell about it. you know, it's not all just going to come for free.
Yes, and also the way the video is looking, what's starting to look is, it kind of sounds like, you know, supporting comics is like a charity, and that's not really something I would like, you know, people to think about the industry I'm in, or you know, any indie, or for any indie creator rather. You know, it shouldn't be a charity. People should be trying the book because they want to try it out, because they like it. You shouldn't be making pleas about how people should try the book anyway, because
it's like I love Brett Lewis. You know, I really love that dude's comics. Yeah. I really love Futureman, but I'm not going to buy a book like Fallout Toy Works that doesn't look interesting to me just because I think the guy's other work is cool. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. And I think just analyzing that whole video again, the focus is, he talks about how there's too many superhero comics, and he says, one point says, you shouldn't be doing work for these guys, and then one moment later he's saying you should do more original content, and like, wait, what's your issue? Do you want more people to create superhero comics, to create less superhero comics and more other comics, or do you want more people to create their own comics?
I don't think it was appealing for anyone to do, and again, this comes from the lack of focus in the video, because I totally get how you could get that from it. I don't think that he was trying to say that as much as he was trying to say that people should support the comics more. Yeah, I don't think he was saying anything about creators doing
that. And
he was saying that the creators should have the option to be able to support themselves off of their creator-owned work.
Oh, yeah.
But it doesn't work that way.
Exactly. The way the industry's set up right now with Diamond and the retailers, I mean,
that's the first place the change is going to have to happen, absolutely.
Exactly. There's nothing the fans can do about it. I mean, if stores were to stock up on and take a gamble and try more books, that could probably encourage that kind of behavior. But considering how the economy...
Retailers entirely, too, because they've got the audience they have to work with. They've got space
issues. Yeah,
they've
got bills to pay. You know, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, the retailers, again, you know, a lot of them take a lot of the blame. We've all been in the terrible comic shop where some dude doesn't even get up from his chair or whatever it might be
to try and ask
what you want or anything like that. We've all been in that store, and that store sucks, and you shouldn't support that store, but sometimes it's the only game in town.
Exactly. And I mean, you mentioned that there are a lot of stores out there that will only buy from one publisher too. I mean, there's I know stores that only sell Marvel books or only DC books, and would never take the time to do indie stuff or Image books or anything like that. And granted, you can't control how people are, but I think there is a way to, you know, there are better ways to reach people, and they're better. And I think there are more creative ways to do it. I mean, if create your own books, for example, you could offer bigger discounts to retailers or something like that. Maybe they'll encourage them to buy more, and then, you know, you kind of pay it forward, you know?
Yeah.
And there are many ways to do it. And unfortunately, though, the way, you know, the economic climate is right now, and the way people are getting really, you know, people are being very careful with their spending and particularly their disposable income, it's just hard to control, hard to tell how people will buy, you know. I buy creator-owned books. I buy quite a few of them, actually, and I buy a little of everything from everyone. And I just think there's a better way to get that message out there, a better way to tell people about what he wants to do
Scotty Young did it right.
Scotty Young did it right, and I think Jason Latour had a good one too earlier yesterday.
Yeah. The genesis of the Scotty Young thing, for, you know, just for everybody that hasn't read it, is that you know it's about word of mouth. That it's about promoting it yourself, about, you know, getting people excited about it, and not just, you know. And Eric Cowell, again, like, the thing that he did wrong was, when you advertise a video as "this is me pissing in the wind," you're not exactly setting a good precedent for what the content of the video is.
Yeah.
You know?
And
Scotty Young said it right. You should be talking about the books that you love, as opposed to just yelling at people about what they're doing and not doing.
Yeah, what they're doing wrong. I mean, speaking of Scotty Young, him and Chris Iliopoulos and Kate Beaton, among others, they sell digital copies of their books online for $2 a pop. You realize if enough people, you know, get into that, that is such a cheap, you know, that is such a cheap, you know, price point that anyone can get into their books.
Oh, just coming from the perspective of somebody who wants to make comics, I'm not going to bother with print unless I start digital and get something, you know, get enough momentum.
Yeah, build up a fan base.
Exactly. Because then, particularly if you're going to self-publish something or if you're going to look to see, you know, if you can sell it at a publisher, there's no point anymore to not trying to mm-hmm. find that initial reader base, because mm-hmm. there are people who will read something digital. One of my favorite comics is by a guy named Casey Green. He does a webcomic called Gun Show. Before that, he mm-hmm. did an autobiographical thing called Horribleville. Mm-hmm. Horribleville is probably the best autobiocomic I've ever read. It's absolutely incredible. It's I think the website is www.horribleville.com, and it's just this amazing webcomic. And he started, you know, he went and he, you know, printed up copies of it. And I've read the entire thing once or twice, and I still went and picked up the physical copies of it because it's the sort of thing that it's like, I want to be able to have that to loan out to people. I want to be able to have, you know.
Of course, you want to support the guy too, and, you know, so he'll have something. So that's always good.
See,
and
even that was in the back of my mind because mm-hmm. it was the sort of thing that I just really wanted to have in my hands because it's such a great story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing too. I mean, he was talking about, Powell was talking about the lack of original material. Look at the webcomics. There are thousands of great webcomics out there. Hundreds of them.
I think that's the biggest thing he got wrong, because I think we're in a golden age of creativity with comics. I think more people are trying new things. I was going through previews last month, and, you know, I saw more new publishers that I hadn't heard of than I ever would have expected. And I go through every month. I'd say I've gone through the last year and a half or so of previews. I had a gap here and there. But, like, there were three or four publishers that had 8 or 9 books, and I was like, who are these guys? And they all looked really cool, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know why he's so frustrated, because, well, he seems to be doing well from what I know. And I'm assuming he's probably me. I'm sure he meant well, and
especially once you get in the last few minutes of that video, you realize that it came from a very pure place for him. Came from, you know, it definitely came from a good place. It's mm-hmm. just like it
was just really tacky, you know.
Exactly.
It's
perfect. Yeah, exactly. That's,
how are you going to go to the next convention where he exhibits at San Diego, for example? How are you going to show up there and in the aftermath of this? And what if, you know? I mean, I saw him and Rick Remender were kind of going at it for a bit on Twitter.
And they're good friends.
Exactly.
Yeah, they shared table space at one of the Emerald City cons.
Yeah, they shared tables. Yeah, and in New York Con a couple of years ago. So you just gotta wonder how that's affecting other people, because these people are actually having fun doing, company-owned stuff.
Yeah, and you see a lot of people too who completely agreed with him and were really on his side. And it's, you know, he's probably coming from a spot where he's seen a lot of his friends go through shit like that. He's, you know, of course, you know, probably started out going through things like that, mm-hmm. or is having trouble finding, you know, a place for another book. Mm-hmm. But again, you professionalism carries weight, you know.
Yeah, you just have to conduct yourself properly online. I mean, I know it was just Twitter, but still. And,
I mean, it's the sort of thing where you can't mince words about it, but there's a difference between arguing about it in a sensible way and equating doing superhero work to, you know, ass-fucking.
Yeah, it's actually really sad that he went to that point, but again, he did what he felt he had to do. I think, you know, I like The Goon. I actually love that book, and I will continue to support the book, but man, it's kind of hard to... Kind of hard to like that guy after that. I mean, I don't know how to say it properly, but I mean, I'll continue to support the guy. He's talented. You can't take that away from him. But man, he's just been on the tear the last few weeks on Twitter, especially, because he's been, it clearly bothered him for quite some time now that he's going nuts over it on Twitter.
Yeah,
it culminated with this video that I unfortunately probably didn't do him any favors, but at least it encourages some dialogue. You know, it's got people talking, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, another thing that I don't think works with it is, you know, you've got the face for it, the Creators Front for Diversity in Comics, uh-huh. I believe is the full name of it, and he's not doing anything else with that. You know, it's not like it has a Facebook group. It doesn't have any sort of thing on Twitter where they're making announcements or telling you what to read or anything like that. It's like he's really, you know, it's again, the lack of focus is what's really making him look like an ass here.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe give him some time. I think he'll probably come up with something better. I think this was just a spur of the moment type of thing, even though it was a very well produced spur of the moment type of thing. It's certainly better than the infamous green screen Robert Kirkman video.
You didn't like Kirkman on a boat? Wow.
That was something else.
But, cruise comics, yeah.
I mean, the way Kirkman handled himself was great, because he was very optimistic. He was basically trying to get people to do more of their own thing, which is cool. But this video, I don't know what the hell he wanted me to do. Except maybe turn off YouTube. But yeah, good. I hope, Powell, I'm glad he got this out of his system, though.
And it's getting a lot of people talking, which is cool. It's like you said, it's kind of open to dialogue. So. Yeah.
And I don't know if it'll actually end up with an improvement for the industry, because honestly, this has happened way too many times already, where someone spurs a conversation about this and then nothing happens. I mean, remember Steve Niles and Tony Harris were supposed to start like a guild or something like that, mm-hmm. And that nothing happened out of that too. But, I think the lesson we all
secretly
learned here...
they were talking about Warcraft.
and I think what we learned here is that people, comic creators and Twitter, can be a bad thing. Because of all the stuff that they... Just all the stuff that they can say.
One day you're a respected creator who makes sense, the next day you're Kevin Smith.
Oh, man, don't even get me started on that guy.
He had a heart attack or something because he hasn't said anything that's made sense online. Twitter is the worst thing to ever happen to that dude's career. Forget Jersey Girl. Like, seriously, the worst thing that could have happened to him was getting a Twitter account.
Yeah, I had to stop following him. I got to that point. I used to follow him. I stopped. In the same way, I stopped listening to his podcast, too.
It's like, I wish I could blame his Twitter on pot. But I really just think he's an idiot. Like, I really just think he's lost his mind.
Yeah. I mean, I do applaud what he's trying to do with his movie distribution thing. And I think, if it works out right, if he pulls it off, I think that's going to be a game changer for any person who makes indie movies. I think that could be a good thing.
He's going to pull it off. And, It comes down to the Robert Kirkman, Eric Powell thing. You've already got an audience, mm-hmm. and that audience is, of course, going to pick up on the message, and he's going to get, horror fans who like a cheesy horror movie. But again, it's just kind of a piss in the wind. It's going to be the sort of thing that critics are going to hate, more than likely. I would be absolutely shocked if anybody thinks the movie is some kind of game-changing critical masterpiece, because it's Kevin Smith. It just seems like he's getting outside his own reach with this. Like, I really like Kevin Smith's films, or at least a good handful of them. Mm-hmm. Eric Powell, I love most of what he's done. Kevin Smith's touch and go. But I really think he was trying hard to make an art film, and when you try hard to make an art film, sometimes it reeks of trying too hard to make an art film, And that's probably why it couldn't get picked up.
Well, for you're referring to Red State, right?
Red State, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think people were interested. I mean, he was in a he was in a gathering of distributors, and mm-hmm. they were people. There are people who are looking into purchasing the film, but then he basically blocked the whole thing by saying he's buying it himself and he's going to sell. He said, I'm going to sell it myself and bring it around myself. So that's why there was controversy over his screening in Sundance. He basically told everyone to go fuck off. He's going to do it himself, which is kind of a stupid way to do it. But
yeah, I misunderstood it and thought that there were no bids for it.
He stopped. He made sure that there was no bids because he bid on it himself.
Oh, he stopped the bidding process. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of ridiculous. He set the whole thing up just to do that, which is kind of stupid because you just wasted people's time.
I hope it's a great movie. I'd love to see Kevin Smith do something that big.
Yeah,
but
it'll be nice to him for him to go out on a very very high note. I think because he has one more movie after this and then he's done. He's just gonna concentrate on his Smodcast thing and producing other people, which is cool. It's kind of sad though because I thought he had a lot to say. I thought he had a lot to that he could have done, but I think screwed him up the most when that movie, what's his name, Zach and Mary Make a Porno, when that movie flopped, I think that really screwed him up.
Well, that flopped. Cop Out didn't do very well.
Well,
it was just
It just started with Zach and Mary because that was like, you know, he because he had, you know, as he had mentioned in his podcast before, the biggest comedy star, good writing, and we had everything going for it. And it was it was something he was very proud of, and it had some decent studio backing and everything, good promotional campaign, and then it flopped. It was a disappointment. And he was, I remember listening to his Smodcast at that time and how screwed up he was and how he basically never left his house for a week or something like that. And whatever, he was just really screwed up by the whole thing. And then he did Cop Out when he started to feel better a bit. But of course, you know, that didn't work out either. It's just sad because I think he has a very distinct voice. And I think he's much better than people give him any credit for, because he's capable of a lot more. But I think it looks like he's given up, and he's trying to go out basically with a bang. You know, that's sad.
It's probably for the best, because he's gonna find himself yelling at somebody at Cannes Film Festival and having a heart attack. You know?
Yeah. Oh well. It's you know, whatever he does, good luck to him. I hope he pulls off whatever he plans to do, and I hope it works out really well, because it'd be nice also not only to go out with a good movie under your belt, but to go out being right. It's always good to be right.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. So,
well, I don't see him getting any Eisner nods for Batman Cacophony or Widening Gyre.
God,
so.
Keep him away from Batman. Just keep him away from Batman, please, because that's some bullshit. Seriously, Batman pisses himself. That's...
You're one.
That is just so stupid. I mean, really. He just had to incorporate one of his jokes in there, you know? On Batman. And I can handle humor in Batman, but Batman's not supposed to be the joke. Oh, well. At any rate... It was nice talking to you about this whole thing, and it was nice talking about some comics too, even though we really didn't spend much time on them. We spent so much on this, on the whole Eric Powell thing. And again, before I close this out, I just want to say I have nothing but respect for Eric Powell. I love his work, and I just think he could have done this better, you know. And wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he could have done this better. I'm really glad, though, it's opened up dialogue, and maybe, you know, and us, you know, for people like us who are also creating our own books, who are, you know, looking into self-publishing or doing webcomics or whatever, getting the word out there about our own work, it's, you know, it's nice that there are people who are up there who are successful enough that they give a rat's ass, that they want people, you know, the next batch of people, next generation of creators to do well. I like that, and
the idea of it is terrific.
Yeah, the idea is terrific. I just wish he handled himself better, because I don't know, that's not going to do him any favors, and I worry about his mental health. So, at any rate, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, you can write me at theloika@gmail.com. And that's theloika@gmail.com. You can find me on Facebook and on Twitter as well at facebook.com/patloika or twitter.com/patloika. Adam, where can people find you on the internet if you are on the internet?
I am on the internet, Pat. I am on the internet. Twitter.com/AdamWitt, AdamWitt. And the same for Facebook.
Excellent. And we'll be back next week, and we will be talking about, more comic stuff. And I don't know if I'll have anyone with me, but I will be talking for sure. And also, I just wanted to do a cheap plug here. This show has been nominated for the Noisy Awards for Best New Single-Person Podcast. So do yourself a favor and vote, because this is... Because I would like to win an award. You just go to deliberatenoise.com/awards, and you will find the category is Favorite New Single Host Comic Book Podcast, and it is listed as Loika Mania. And, yes, just follow the instructions there and to submit your votes, and I will be eternally grateful. And this also gives me an excuse to add Noisy Award nominated to the front of the title of this show. Wouldn't that be great? Or Noisy Award winning podcast, rather. All right. Once again, thank you for listening, and I will see you next week.
Figuring some things don't change ever, right? And then one stupid thing happens. 20, 25 minutes out of your whole life. And all the ropes that kept you hanging in there get cut loose. And it's like there you are, right back in the jungle again. All right, boy, it was a nightmare, but it's over now.